Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 171, recorded August 26th, 2010, Fort Sloth. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Backing up the files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite. For a free trial plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com, offer code Windows. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers everything that comes out of the...
Wow.
Part of Redmond. You know where I was going. You could tell. You know, you could tell where I was going with that, and I'm not going to go there. Comes out from the mines of Microsoft.
Everything that extrudes out of Microsoft.
Yes. And here he is, Mr. Paul Thurrott. With another product from Seattle, actually, in his hot little hands.
Yes.
Paul is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com. News editor for Windows IT Pro. He's crying. He's got it. Is it dark? Is it rich? Is it Colombian? It's the new Kindle. Look at that. You're not going to take the plastic off?
First of all, yes. Of course I am.
You're going to be like one of those people who has a living room coated in plastic?
Sorry, Leo. You were saying something.
Never mind. We don't need to do a show.
Thank God.
So instead of a white bezel, it's got a black bezel. What else is new?
Yeah. It's much smaller and thinner.
Is it? Noticeably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The screen's the same size, but the outer bit. I don't have my old one in here with me to show you, but the...
They say the screen is higher contrast, yes?
Yeah. You know, I'm curious to see how it is higher contrast, because I wonder if it's not some combination of the background color being a little lighter, which would help.
Right.
And then obviously the text itself having a higher contrast. Yeah, God, I love this thing.
Dr. Mom says you can download your entire Audible.com library is accessible through Wi-Fi, so it could become it's a Audible device as well.
Yes, it is.
Awesome.
I wish that Apple would make an iPad of this size. This is the right size.
That's interesting.
This is what I've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll be with you momentarily.
You know, there's a new show on Revision 3 you might want to guest on called Unboxing Porn.
I'm not about the unboxing. I'm actually about the using. And in this case, the reason I'm excited about the Kindle is because I use this thing every day. You know, I've literally had a Kindle since the day you could have one.
I now have two Kindles because we're cleaning out Abby's room after dropping off for college. We found a Kindle.
Nice.
In the pile.
not a big reader, that one.
I thought, I don't remember buying her a Kindle, but I guess I did at some point. No, it didn't have any other books on it. It was an unused Kindle, essentially.
Interesting.
Fortunately, it was in a hard shell case, so the fact that it was under 13 pounds, 18 layers of detritus did not impact it. Okay, we'll just take a break while Paul plays with his Kindle.
No, I'm good. I'm just charging it so I can, read and stuff
later.
Okay, I'm ready. Sorry.
So today, I guess we'll save the Kindle review for next week. Because we want to give you a little time to play with it.
Yep.
You aren't like some who would actually now review it. Dvorak reviewed stuff without actually taking it out of the box. He said, oh, no, you can tell everything you need to know by looking at the box.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
With somebody like him, with his many years in business, that's all he needs. Just look at the box. That's crap.
I'll probably do a little more in-depth study of it than that.
I'm maligning my mentor. He, of course, does more than look at the box. Although I've seen him review stuff from the box.
Oh, the text is very contrasty.
Is it? Is it noticeably?
Oh, yeah.
On the box?
No, in the machine.
Oh, that's good.
Beautiful.
Sorry. It's okay. Item one. book.
By the way, sir.
Yes.
Please don't read this out loud, but item four has the date attached to it.
Yes. Should I take that off?
Yes, please.
Oh, it's too bad. I've already published that on the...
Yep. That was my mistake.
On the blog there.
Oh, good. Yeah.
hold on a sec while I I quickly edit history. I understand what you're saying, and I will comply.
Thank you for your compliance and your understanding.
Citizen, I will comply. I am about to comply right now. So it is done, in the words of...
Effectively, yes.
Either God or Michelangelo, I can't remember. It is done.
Yeah, there's a... I finished the writing of the book, the initial writing of the book before I went to Germany. And then while I was in Germany, I did a bunch of what we call AR, the author review, which is awful. I put some stuff on my blog about this. You know, if you've written a book, so you know, especially in the old days, back when we first started, when I first started writing books, whenever that was, 15 years ago or so, of course, the editing process occurred on paper.
Right.
You know, they would actually send you a box that had the thing printed out, and then various people would have gone over it with different colored pencils, and you would have to respond to every single query.
Awful.
By hand. It was awful. And I remember, and I related the story in the blog, my initial co-author, the guy who got me into writing in the first place, was telling me when we were anticipating it coming back from the first book that we worked on, that he had previously gotten one back. I think it was the first book he wrote. And when he opened it up and he saw what they had done to his writing, he actually cried.
Look what they've done to my song.
Because it's awful. Well, it's just, it's hard to take because there's so much.
Well, they don't usually think of computer book authors as writers. So
that's interesting. Okay, yeah, sure. So
I'm sure the editors said, "Well, we'll just fix this."
I've gotten used to it. It is daunting because there are four different people that get to edit the book, and they all have a different role to play.
Right.
And some of the stuff they do around grammar and stuff, I don't really care about. And then a book like this, where obviously it was kind of schedule constrained, Do you mind if we make this into a list? I don't really care.
Right.
That I even have to respond to that kind of stuff to me is just a waste of time. But, this was an important chance for me to go over stuff and make sure that I had the right language. I used the word toolbar in a lot of places in the book. And then at some point I realized this is called an application bar in this system. And I had to go back and change all that.
That's actually an interesting issue because nomenclature, just me, I could call it the toolbar, but you're in a book that's going to kind of define the category.
Right. I need to be able to say, this is called this, and this is why it's called this. It's like this. It works this way if you're used to Windows or something. There are things on phones, from the iPhone, that are like a right click. One of the things you can do in Windows Phone is you can tap and hold down, and it brings up a menu, just like a right click. But there's a term for that, And one of the things I'd asked Microsoft about very early on was whether they had a style guide or a list of this kind of nomenclature, and they were very early on working on it. So this is something that evolved over time. That's one of those things. AR, you want to make sure that stuff's all right. And then I had some front matter stuff to write and all that. And what I have now are the final PDFs. So these are very minor edits you can make. I can't add sections anymore. I can't delete big sections. I can't. I can just make changes that don't affect the layout. So it's getting there. It's pretty much done. The writing's done.
You don't want to comment on this part in the note where you say, I'll never do this again, never, ever.
Well, I make my standard.
You said that last time, Paul. I just want to point that out. It is standard.
Yeah. Sadly, I'm
probably already committed to another one.
I don't know.
Dude, you don't have to look at me. I'm looking at a shelf filled with 12 books that I wrote. Each and every one, I said, I'll never do this again. Finally, I never did it again.
Right.
But it took a while. It's kind of like a crack kind of thing.
Because you don't
really gain much from it.
If anything. And, right. All it really does is hollow out your soul a little bit more every time.
Yeah. That's a nice thing. Yeah.
I think the thing I'm happy about with Windows Phone, though, is that every once in a while something comes along that really rejuvenates my excitement about technology, belief that technology can have a positive impact on our lives and all that stuff,
No, we're in this business because we love technology. Let's face it.
Yeah.
That's what puts us here.
It's not just because I cover Microsoft. I don't mean that in a cynical way. But, as you get older and you witness more and you see nothing worked the way it's supposed to work and all the things that were going to be great never being great. And, over time, it's like, it gets these events, get stretched out further and further. So, you know, Windows Phone is nice for me because I really do believe that it's excellent. And I think that people are going to be blown away by it. I'm excited about it. I love that it's new. We talked about this, I'm sure, on the podcast a lot over the years that, you know, when you go back and you start over, whether it's with HTML or with devices like the iPhone, where you don't have all this stuff from the past, you know, you're starting over. There's missing stuff, which is an interesting story, but it's also a chance to get stuff right, you know, from the get-go. And I love that. And Windows Phone is such a neat example of that, you know, and there aren't many things like that anymore. I mean, Windows is great. You know, Windows 7 is awesome, but it's the next version of Windows, right? I mean, it's not ultimately something very different. It's something very familiar, which is okay. But I think the thing I really like about Windows Phone is just that it's so new and different and, to me, demonstrably better. And it's exciting. It's neat to have that, you know, almost childlike, you know, appreciation.
No, I'm with you.
It doesn't happen a lot for me.
I wonder if it happens less now than it did. I mean, in the early days of technology, I guess for all of us, there was plenty to get really excited about because it was new.
Absolutely.
And there were big things happening all the time. I think phones are like that.
To do it again. Yeah, yeah. Right. It's like if you look at the phone market right now, it is like the PC market. And by PC, I don't mean IBM PC. I mean the, you know, personal computer market from the early 1980s when there was, you know, TI and even companies like video game companies like Coleco and Atari, Commodore, obviously, Apple, all the Sinclair and all these different companies vying for, you know, who knows what was going to happen in the future. And eventually this all consolidates down until you only have a few major players. And I'm sure eventually the cell phone industry, the smartphone industry will head down that same path. But right now we're still in that kind of Wild West period. It's exciting.
It's called maturity. I mean, it happens in every industry. It becomes a mature industry. And mature industries are much less interesting than new industries.
Yeah. And you know, we had an Audible pick last week about the car industry, and I've been going through that book since. And it's fascinating to me if people, even if you're not interested in cars or the auto industry or the history of that, if you are interested in the tech industry, I still think you should go back and read that book because it is very, very similar to the tech industry, right? There were companies that, you know, we as just individuals, you know, but maybe people are into technology, not necessarily into cars, might not think of a company like Ford or GM or whatever as being an innovator. But, you know, in their day, actually, those companies were amazing innovators in some cases, and in some cases, of course, not. But you can follow the parallels between these companies and, you know, the Microsofts and Apples and whatever's of our own industry. The parallels are amazing there. They really are. And
well, you know what I'm curious about is I think there's a rebirth of the auto industry.
Right. Well, and
which that book wouldn't cover, but...
Well, except one thing. So one of the things, you know, I never really appreciated was we're familiar with the collapse that just happened with the U.S. car industry. What we maybe some of us, you know, some of us who don't follow the car industry very closely aren't aware of is that this is at least the third time that's happened. GM almost ran out of cash in the early 1990s. You know, Chrysler, of course, did file or, you know, had to get federal help in the 1980s. And then going back over time, there were different time periods where car companies had different troubles. And of course, in the early days, there were companies that combined and consolidated. There were a lot more car companies, right, than there are today in the U.S.
Right.
And a lot of the famous names we associate with cars today, like Dodge and Ford and all that, were other things, you know, early on. Very interesting. Anyway, so there are some parallels there. But also, you know, just looking at the phone, I mean, I think, again, parallels to the PC industry that we're familiar with, but now we're in early days again. It's fun. It's neat to be able to go back to, you know, there's something that's at the beginning, frankly, you know, and it is starting again. It's neat. This is a nice time period. So I'm going to stop covering Windows at all and just do the phone stuff from now on.
Yeah. And I'm going to stop covering computers and start doing car stuff. So there you go.
Yes. There we go. If we ever run into each other again, it was fun.
I'll never forget Sam. I worked with Sam Whitmore at ZD for a long time. Just a nice guy, great editor. Loved the industry, loved covering it, was very talented. And I remember, this was 15 years ago, he said, I'm done. I hate this. I'm burnt out. I've been covering this too long. I'm burnt out. I'm done. It was during that kind of bleak period where innovation did seem to be dead. Everybody was just kind of grinding it out. It was before the dot-com. So the dot-com was the next thing that really kind of changed everything. But right before that, if you remember in 97 or 98, it was kind of like, oh, boy. And he did actually. Now he's a media consultant. He still kind of does it with the technology. He's like technology media consultant. But I remember he just said, I can't. This is not going anywhere.
Hey, there was a for me anyway, kind of a dark period there for 2-3 years in a row, where basically tech news had devolved into the Microsoft antitrust trial.
Yeah, that was in the early days of tech TV.
There was.
It was horrible.
All there
yeah.
was. Yeah. And what else? What are you going to do? You got to cover it. It's
right.
big stuff, you know? And I remember, I think it must have been Microsoft, had sent me a box. I had these things for years of Gates. It was Bill Gates and I want to say Stu Ballmer deposition tapes, right? And you remember those famous depositions that Gates gave us?
Oh, God, that was horrible.
Oh. Oh, listen, try watching these things in real time. It was every minute of every deposition. And, you know, so you put it on, you know, on your VCR because it was literally
a
VHS tape. Click play and you watch about 5 minutes of it and you're like, oh, there's no way. And it's like 170 hours of this. So it was like this
now you
crazy
know
amount of stuff. I mean,
why we're glad we're not lawyers, my friend.
But that's what happens, right? The Microsoft antitrust trial specifically required people like you and I who are
tech people,
understand tech, to have to look into and try to understand these legal issues, right? Yeah. And many of which are just
obscure,
you know, based in the Sherman Antitrust Act stuff from, right. you know, 100 years ago, whatever.
Right.
And then, of course, on the flip side, there are legal experts and there are business people who cover news for the business publications who just don't understand the technology industry, looking at Microsoft from the other side saying, okay, so wait a minute, they make I get it, they make Windows, but what's this? They what? They integrated something and what's happening here? You know, I mean, to them, that the technical issues were equally opaque. That was an interesting, but man, if that could have just lasted 6 months, you know, that would have been nice.
What you're saying is no one was happy.
Yeah.
No one. So, well, anyway, you're going to do another book, I'm sure, but this one is coming to a close. I'm excited about Windows Phone 7. We're still looking at an October release date, I think.
Yep.
The marketplace is open, though.
Or will be. So Microsoft this week made some announcements. You know, I think maybe not every single week, but on an ongoing basis, right through the launch, we're going to see a bunch of announcements out of them. So,
we had the
game stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you'll see an announcement similar to the games announcement from last week that will be around apps. You know, I think that at some point Microsoft's going to want to push the fact that, you know, major app developers are releasing mainstream non-game applications, you know, for Windows Phone as well. So I think we'll see that. But they announced that the final version of the developer tools, all of which are free, will be coming out on September 16th, right? About a month before the marketplace goes live and before the launch. These tools will include some of the stuff that's been missing. So if you're a developer, you know that some pretty key tools, actually, like the ability to create pivots and panoramic experiences and so forth have been missing. So those are finalized and they'll be in that final version. And then I think they said the marketplace for Windows Phone in early October. I don't think they gave a specific date. But that will go live in advance of the availability of the phones, and you know of the launch event. So that stuff's coming. So that's neat.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting one. Is it every carrier?
The plan is for it to be on all the major carriers. Yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah, I mean I can't say specifically who's doing what and whether on the very first day that every single carrier will have a phone, but yeah.
But you know, you just can't say.
I don't know specifically. I just know what they've told me is that it will be all carriers. I mean, but what I don't know is if on day one, you know, every single carrier will have a phone. I would imagine most of them will in the U.S.
Right.
If not all, yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's got to be that's one of the keys to the success of Android is that it's many phones on many carriers. That's one of the disadvantages Apple has always had, which is we make the hardware and we make the software.
Oh, it's a two-edged sword. I mean, there are huge advantages to doing it.
Right.
And then there's some disadvantages. So, yeah, Apple certainly hasn't struggled, you know, in the smartphone market in any way. So,
I guess, yeah, you can't say it's a horrible thing.
Yeah, but they really blew it, didn't they?
Oh, man, what a mistake they made.
I still, not to get off on a side thing, but like many iPhone users over the years, I've talked and talked and talked about how, God, if they would just put this thing on Verizon, I'd be gone in a second, you know. But there's a nagging thing in the back of my head that makes me wonder if that's no longer true, because I really do feel like AT&T has done a lot of work to bolster their network. There's a lot of really neat stuff that you get being an AT&T customer. You know, I talked about some of the wireless plans that I can add on the fly when I go to Europe. You can monitor your usage using an AT&T app, which is excellent and is not available from other carriers around the world. I know that my friends in Europe, when they come here, don't have those opportunities to do something similar. So, you know, it's easy to dump on AT&T, but, you know, we'll see. I honestly think at this point, when the phones come out, I'll probably be getting a phone that's on AT&T. You know, I think it will just be easier.
Really? Wow. Yeah, because you're already an AT&T customer. Well, that you just made somebody at AT&T very happy, Paul.
Well, I don't know about that, but I mean, I just, like I said, you know, it's unclear that Verizon would have withstood the barrage of iPhone users any better than AT&T did.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, AT&T does have great customer service, which is something Verizon could never claim.
Really?
Yeah.
Since everybody has their favorite, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
Oh, no. I've been at the front of the line complaining about AT&T. I'm not one-sided on it. I don't know. You know, it seems like enough time has gone by.
Yeah, and there's another maybe phrase that people often use in a case like this. It's called Stockholm Syndrome.
Okay.
Well, I love my captor. He's a good captor. He is a kind captor. He only beats me on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Well, I think you and others know me well enough to know that I'm not always looking for the positive necessarily.
I'm teasing
but
you.
Fair enough.
I am teasing you. So when we talked last week, we talked about the new home server and small business server, Aurora and Vail.
Yes.
And I guess you're home. We didn't even mention this. Welcome home.
I'm home, yes.
You were in Germany last couple of weeks and now back in Dedham, aptly named. Was there a dead ham in the town square? Is that where the name came from? Or?
No. No. there are towns around here like Westwood.
Right.
Which used to be like West Dedham, and Norwood, which used to be North Dedham.
Oh, interesting. So Dedham was the mother of the ship, the home.
There was a period of time. I learned this in a history class in New Mexico, of all places. That
really?
In the early days, there was Boston, and then everything outside of Boston was Dedham.
And, I love it.
You know, it was like that map of the world where they, you know, it's the world according
us,
to Dedham.
Not us. You know? Yeah. Yeah. There's Boston, and everything else is Dedham. There's Microsoft and everything else is Dedham.
I assume there's a Dedham, England, and that the name is derived from that.
Oh, yes, I'm sure there is. And they probably have a town pastry. I only mentioned that. I know that's a bit of a non sequitur because I received the town pastry of Manchester, England last week.
I see.
They call it the fly pie or Eccles cake. And apparently every town in the UK has its own specialty pastry.
If you've ever had pastry from the UK, I think you'd understand it.
I know we can do better than those fools in Norfolk. So anyway, back to the servers.
Yes, sir.
Oh, so I was just delaying the pain. Go ahead.
It's like, oh, no, this is
good stuff.
You're approaching this the wrong way.
I know. I
know. I know you don't like servers, but these are, for me, they're home servers. You know, Aurora is the very small business server, and Vail is its counterpart for the home server. And I'm going to be doing both. So I have I had a Windows server downstairs that was running Windows Server 2008 R2 Standard Edition that I've wiped out and put Aurora on that one. And then I ordered a server. Well, it's really just a desktop tower, like an Optiplex. Almost identical. It's just the newer versions, you know, Optiplex 780 that I'm going to be using for Vail. And that one's going to, I bought, you know, two terabyte hard drives. For that, because that will have all the media, and I want to do data duplication and all that stuff. But, you know, one of the things I've been working on here since I've been home is how to integrate these things. It turns out they don't integrate all that well, but they can certainly exist side by side. But what I want to do is use Aurora for the user management stuff, mm-hmm. and then use Vail for the, you know, the digital media stuff. And
so you could use both in one environment. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason that I'm excited about Aurora is because it's got all the Active Directory stuff, you know, but in a really super easy to use way. And you can add on to it. I mean, one of the things I want to look into is it doesn't have Hyper-V out of the box. I'd like to be able to put some Hyper-V on there so I could run virtual machines as well on the server. And I think I might have to upgrade it to standard to do that. But I've got a call with Microsoft about that and some other stuff coming up next week. But the other thing, though, is with the Active Directory stuff is you can do the roaming user profile stuff. And what I want to have is the ability to not have to sit here and provision laptops like I do every single time a machine comes in the house. I want to be able to open it up, log on to the domain, and have all my stuff shoot down. Mm. And so that's something I'm going to be working on. So there's a lot to learn, a lot to come. So I think this is going to be a big topic, I think, for the next few months as these things head toward their final versions. I mean, I think the Veil stuff is very straightforward. It's, you know, media storage and sharing, very simple. But the Aurora stuff is a different thing, and it's been a while since I've sort of wrapped my head around this stuff. So it's gonna be a trip back into group policy and some of that, you know, enterprise type stuff. But I think there's some interesting ideas there, and I think for people who want to protect their, I know it sounds crazy implementing a domain in your house, but if you're a technical person and you do the stuff at work anyway, and you're one of those guys who maybe did the TechNet stuff or whatever, and you're evaluating the software, I mean, yeah, you know, having an understanding of how this works at home certainly could help you at work. So I think there's some interesting stuff around domains, even in the context of a house. But I'll be playing with that. So we'll talk about that more in the future. But I just wanted people to know that I'm starting that up now that I'm back.
It's actually good that you do that because you outline best practices. When I get something like this, I go, oh, well, okay, cool, neat. What do I do? What can I do? And you almost need somebody to kind of guide you through workflow and best practices with stuff like this. So it's good. I like that you write this stuff up, actually.
This one's interesting just because it's new. I mean, it's going to introduce this stuff to a whole new audience. Aurora is really designed for people who know nothing about computers. It's very simple to add users. They're using Active Directory in the background. You really don't have to do much. You know, it will auto back up your hard drives and all that stuff. Your PCs, you know, central backup of PCs, just like home server. It's neat. But I think there's some crossover stuff you can do in there. You can actually dive in. All the management stuff for Windows Server basically is in there. So I think there are some advanced, I don't know what to call it. It's not really, it's some cross-pollination, you know, of enterprise type features into these very small environments. I think there's some good possibilities there.
And here from one of our chatters is a picture of Dedham Vale, England. Very peaceful.
It's very, very serene. Very actually, calm. It's funny. That's exactly what my backyard looks like.
See? It was aptly named.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Except my wife is raking.
That's what happens when you get a lot of trees, a lot of leaves, a lot of raking.
Yep.
Apparently named after a constable.
I'm sorry. Oh, after constable.
Constable Dedham.
Yeah. I told you the story. I had that history class and I had asked, or the woman had pronounced it as Dedham, you know, and I kind of raised my hand and I said, actually, it's Dedham.
No, you're wrong. It's Dedham.
Yeah.
If you were from my area, you'd know it's Dedham. Item 5-4. This is the one I had to change the...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so. Just checking. I want to make sure I change the right thing.
Right.
Hotmail.
Yes, sir.
Hotmail, EAS. What's EAS? Wait a minute. No, let me guess. Executive okay. Area Services. Extended Activity Server. Extremely arduous setup. What?
Wow. Exchange Active Sync.
Of course, that's what I meant. That's what I was thinking.
This is what Google uses so that you can have push access
to I actually use it.
Email calendar contacts on mobile devices like the iPhone. Oh.
By the way, here's the River Stour in Dedham, Essex.
Yeah, so we have a River Charles.
Yeah.
In Dedham, that is slightly less nice than that.
You have boats on it, though. It's like that.
If you put a boat on the Charles River, it would probably erode from the bottom while you were looking at it.
No, come on. Isn't the Charles where...
It's been cleaned up.
Yeah, that's where the Harvard crew rose, isn't it? On the Charles?
Yeah, not that part of it.
Oh, different part.
Yes.
Less traffic.
Less scenic.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, the three-eyed fish from The Simpsons, I think, came from our version.
Okay. It cools the nuclear power plant. Up here in Dedham.
That's right.
So, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's okay.
Exchange Active Sync.
We've known for a long time that Microsoft would be implementing this in Hotmail. And they're actually providing over-the-air push access to email, calendar, contacts, and if you have a supported device, there aren't many tasks. And if you're familiar with Hotmail and the calendar component specifically, there's actually a to-do area of the calendar that equates to tasks.
Cool.
The problem is the iPhone doesn't work with this. None of the Apple devices do.
Even Android doesn't.
I don't think so, because Google only very, very recently added any kind of tasks. And oddly enough, Windows Phone doesn't either, the new version of Windows Phone. But I think Windows Mobile does. I haven't had a chance to test it.
Wouldn't that be ironic?
No, it would be typical. I think we can assume tasks will be coming over time to Windows Phone. But anyway, it's not there now. So this will be implemented any day now for everybody. And it is one of a few different Windows Live type announcements that are coming over the next couple of days, you know, I guess is the way to say it. And I've already published the server information up on my website. So if you're itching to get this thing going, you can get your phone programmed now, and then whenever it goes live, you'll be all set. But I think that as of right now, it's not there yet, but any day now, it should be available for everybody. So that will be happening, you know, by the time you listen to this, perhaps it will be live.
Good, I'm excited. That's fantabulous. Yeah. It's interesting because it's actually a very useful feature
from
Google, and that's kind of surprising. Hotmail's never been it's never been POP-based, right? It's always been its own protocol.
They've offered POP access for those people that need it for you know, older devices, mostly that kind of stuff. They've always done their own proprietary thing, you know, on the Windows client.
Yeah.
And years ago, I mean, I begged them to do IMAP. I mean, to me, IMAP was the big deal.
Yeah, that's it.
And they told me this week that they looked into IMAP and it was fine for email, but of course it doesn't work for any of the other stuff. So they said, look, we already have this Exchange Active Sync.
I think that's the way to do it. Yeah, absolutely.
It'll be more work, but it will be more useful. So Exchange Active Sync is so broadly supported.
Right.
And of course now all the devices do multiple Exchange accounts.
So it has, just for me to understand and those who maybe don't understand, I've used it now and so I kind of do get the value of it. Basically, IMAP is going to do email only. Apple actually in its IMAP implementation has added tasks, but it's very funky.
It's probably like a web dev thing or something.
No, it's basically a mailbox. And a task shows up as a mail. It's not a good solution. So EAS basically gives you all the features of IMAP, if I'm understanding correctly. I think you get, you know, the server-side folders, server-side everything.
Yep.
But you also get calendar, address book, tasks. And is there other stuff in there besides?
No, that's it. And it's the point of it is it's for mobile devices only. It's not, you wouldn't be able to use these settings to implement or to configure, say, Outlook on your Windows desktop for this type of access. This would not work. It's for mobile devices. It is push, you know, technology. It's over the air and it's live, essentially. So if you are on your phone, it doesn't matter what phone it is, and you add, edit, or delete a calendar entry, like a meeting or whatever, or a contact, or you write an email or whatever, this stuff is all reflected immediately to the server, wherever it is, and thus to any client. So if you were to access your email or contacts or calendar from Outlook or Windows Live Mail or from another phone or from an iPad or from an Android device, whatever it is, these things are automatically, I don't want to say synced up because it's almost not really sync, but I guess it is sync. I mean, it's not manual sync where it's, you know, checking against the, you know, that each device is updated. In many ways, what you're doing is always accessing the live copy. And that was really the point of IMAP, that you were dealing with the server. You weren't downloading a copy and then syncing it, which is sort of what POP could be, depending on how you had it configured. So this is
I prefer it. It's how I now do... on my iPhone and my Android phones, how I do...
this is the way to go.
It's just the best. It's fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, one of the fun little tips I have about Windows Phone is that Windows Phone has an accounts profile for Windows Live, of course, you know, because it's a Microsoft phone. So you can configure a Hotmail account with calendar and contacts through this Windows Live account type, and you can do multiple accounts if you want. But on Windows Live, every time you create a mail account, it creates a new icon on the start screen for that account. And, of course, the Windows Live accounts all have the same icon. It's like a Windows Live icon. But if you have two Windows Live type accounts, like Windows Live Hotmail accounts, you could create one using the Live account type, the Windows Live account, and you could create the other one using the Outlook type, because that is Exchange Active Sync. And then they would have two different icons, you know, even though under the covers they're doing exactly the same thing. And that would help you tell them apart, you know, visually, which is kind of a neat little way to do it.
And when you say Hotmail, of course, you mean Live as well.
Yeah, they're interchangeable. So yeah. Hotmail being the Windows Live web-based email service.
Are they just going to dump that name at some point? Hotmail.
Which one? Hotmail. You know, they wanted to. They were transitioning toward that, but the Hotmail name is so popular. They're kind of why. You know, they're kind of constrained. I know, but
I'm always embarrassed, you know, when somebody has a, you know, Leo Laporte at Hotmail, which is, by the way, my address, Leo Laporte at Hotmail.com. It sounds like it's vaguely adult. Doesn't it?
It reminds me of Hot Metal, which was the HTML editor from 2,000 years ago. You know, that mixed case spelling.
Yeah, Hot Metal. Because it was HTML. I get it. Well, that was
right,
terrible.
Which is actually the original Hotmail spelling was like that as well.
Was it really? That's where Hotmail comes from?
HTML.
HTML. Wow. Wow.
Fun fact of the day.
Boy, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Wonder what other words you could do with HTML interspersed. I'll have to play with that a little bit. That's a good game. Making up names with HTML built in.
It's like the I own what's on this side of the car game.
Hotmail, M-A-L-E, would have worked too.
Yep.
Hot tamale.
Yes.
Hot meal.
I think the task, though, is going to be to find a word that does not include the word hot. Yeah.
Hootmail.
Like Hotmail, yeah, like Hot.
If you're
cuisine.
From Scotland, you've got Hootmail. Yahoo Search has completed its transition to Bing.
Yes, in the U.S. and Canada, and only in English. Which kind of throws a little bit of cold water over the complete part of that.
Well, that's a big deal. A foreign language search is a whole nother. It's, you know, I'm sure the indexes are different. Everything's different.
Sure. And so actually, I believe the other languages are happening in just weeks. And then in the U.S. and Canada.
Hate mail. I'm sorry. The chat room. It's the chat room. Blame the chat room and my longstanding ADD. Squirrels.
Does the word have to begin with H? Is that important?
Oh, no, it couldn't. It doesn't.
Okay. Doesn't, no. Yeah.
Because it could be intercapped anywhere. Just as long as H, T, M, and L are in the word and in that order.
Right.
Chat mail, for instance, would be.
Chat.
That's from Sparky.
Yeah.
No, fudge mail does not work, no, Keith. Sorry.
So these are our examples of what is and is not acceptable in this context. Okay. So, you know, I don't use Yahoo Search.
Who does?
I didn't want to say that, but okay. You have to look pretty hard to figure out that this thing has changed at all. I don't think you'd even notice, right? Because if you actually go to yahoo.com and type in a search, you have to scroll all the way to the bottom of that first page to see, I mean, it might be like 6-point type powered by Bing, you know? It's very subtle. It's not in many ways what I envisioned.
I think Yahoo is probably a little embarrassed by this.
Sure.
Microsoft is content because they're going to, you know, they make money off of it. They don't need to promote it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's interesting. I like Bing. But it's old habits die hard.
Well, if you were a Yahoo guy and you used this Yahoo search, I mean, you know, the UI is exactly the same, I think. I don't think it's changed.
No. So you wouldn't know the difference. They used Google. Remember, Yahoo used Google for a few years.
I don't think so you'd never even notice.
You'd never know.
It's weird to me, the powered by Bing thing, it's not even a link. You don't even
really?
Know it's... Yeah, you don't even know it's Microsoft.
I'm sure there was long negotiations over that. Well, if we put that link in, people will start using Bing search instead of Yahoo search. And then,
if this screen was an inch further away, I wouldn't even be able to read it.
Really?
It's
now
teeny.
You're making me want to go look at it.
It's so small.
All right. I'm going to blow up the Yahoo thing. Is it now, if you go to yahoo.com, is that Yahoo search? I don't even know anymore.
Right. So, yes. So you could go to yahoo.com. Just type in a search thing.
Okay. So type in a search. Okay.
You know,
Windows Weekly. Okay.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, and then misspelled. Okay, we've included Windows Weekly in your results. And then somewhere. Oh, way at the bottom.
Yeah.
And it's not a link or anything.
No.
But you could cut and paste it if you felt like it.
I guess so. see. Let's see if that
wow,
works.
Wow, that's Tiny. You're
yeah,
right.
It's really.
You would never see that. That's down there with the, you know, submit your site legal help text, you know, at the very bottom of the bottom of the bottom.
Nobody is ever going to see this thing.
No.
Which I guess was the idea.
Yeah. Well, they don't want anybody to know.
Yeah, well, now you do.
But and the most important thing from Yahoo's perspective is these sponsored results. Those are Yahoo, right? Yahoo continues to sell those. I'm sure they share it with Microsoft.
Let's see if I remember this correctly. I want to say that those kind of results are from Yahoo because they're
yeah. I think simple. Yahoo kept the sales department.
Well, I thought they split it up. I thought there was that Microsoft was going to handle the really rich ads, which of course you don't see on this page at all. And I thought that Yahoo was going to handle the, you know, the text type ads.
Here's an interesting result. This is a paid result at the bottom. I searched for Windows Weekly.
Yep.
And then at the bottom, Weekly Window came up with a search to Target. And I can get free shipping for Weekly Window.
Wow. We should get them as a sponsor.
It must be a window company, right?
Actually, I'd like to speak to Target because Target That's is the name. One major retailer that is not in Dedham.
Probably the city fathers eschewed
it. We're working toward a goal where we never actually have to leave Dedham.
Do you have big box stores in Dedham?
Yeah, we have a Best Buy. We have a Whole Foods now.
Oh, wow.
In fact, it's the biggest Whole Foods in New England.
We call that whole paycheck around our parts.
We often joke, and it's not a joke. You know, sometimes you go into Whole Foods just to buy some beer or a little bit of cheese.
Organic beer.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you leave and you've spent $185.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and
that's,
you have no idea how this happened.
It's because if you spend more than $150, they give you sandals or something.
Leo, we have an Apple store in Dedham.
You do?
Yes, we do.
Do you have a Microsoft store in Dedham?
No, but sometimes I have a yard sale and that's like a...
That is like a Microsoft. Yeah. Get your old 5 1/4 inch floppies here. Woohoo!
Right.
Do you have a Kohl's? I don't know why, but the chat room wants to know if you have a Kohl's. I don't know if that's really the appropriate discussion for this show.
Walpole has a Kohl's.
We go to Walpole and we want the Kohl's. What is Kohl's a department store?
Yeah, it's like a clothing store.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to know that. In all of this excitement, I've lost my show notes. Let me jump back to the show notes so we can move on to Internet Explorer 9. UI revealed. And it looks just like Internet Explorer 8, I'm guessing.
Actually, it looks just like Chrome.
You're kidding.
So the one thing the Microsoft Russia website published this image by mistake of IE9, which is going to be revealed mid-September, right, in San Francisco. They're having an event. And the one bit of information I had gotten in advance of this was that it was going to be extremely stripped down, a very Spartan user interface. And that's what this looks like. It's nice. You know, there was some controversy around, it was actually IE7 when they first split some of the toolbar buttons off to that command bar, like the home button, you know, was on kind of a weird second or third row, depending on what you're looking at, and far away from the back and forward buttons. But now they've kind of all consolidated the tabs, the address bar, the navigation buttons, the home button, and all that stuff. Very Chrome-like in one row. Although in this, you know, unlike in Chrome, this stuff, it's all up in the glass, which I actually think is a really attractive look. So it looks nice.
That's interesting. And I presume that like Chrome and Explorer and everything else, you can skin it. You're not.
We don't know. I mean, this is just a picture. But according to the site, I guess there's some...
Just a picture.
Let's see what was in here. It says there are provisions for recognized or protected sites. I don't know what that means. Click there is pinning in the address bar. Click the site in a new tab and then drag it to the taskbar. I don't know what that means. Tear off tabs, a capability that will build on Windows Arrow Snap feature. Snap allows users to more easily look at two pages side by side by snapping them to the sides of the PC screen. So apparently you'll be able to do that you know, with from tabs. You could pull them off and snap them to the side of the window or to the side of the screen. Yeah, there's not a lot of information yet. So I think we're looking at about 2.5 weeks before this goes public. But this leaked out a little early. So that's what we have so far. Mm. Have you seen the picture?
No. Where is it?
So let's see. What's the quickest way? If you go to winsupersite.com.
On your page. What a surprise.
Well, it's in my blog.
And click the blog link.
Well, in the middle column, you'll see a link below the ad. It says Internet Explorer 9 UI revealed.
Ah. This, by the way, everybody should be doing this. As you listen to the show, you should be following along by going to Supersite.
That's right. That's right. Actually, next in the next episode, I'm going to read my book. And you should also follow along.
You wouldn't want to miss that. Oh, it's very chromey. It's brushed metally. It's a...
They use the glass, which I like.
Using the glass, okay.
I've always wondered why the Microsoft stuff didn't take better advantage of the glass.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of nice.
That means the translucent top bar and then the border, and then they're using tabs at the top, kind of like Chrome does.
Yep.
It's very modern. It's actually very clean. And like Chrome, they don't have a big elaborate menu bar or anything. It's just very clean. I like that.
What's funny about that is Microsoft actually started the trend toward that type of application.
Oh, really?
It was back in the Longhorn days when the browser originally was just going to be the file system. They weren't going to have a separate IE application. That's one of the reasons that IE development stopped for so long. And if you look at the way an Explorer window looks in Windows 7 or Windows Vista, because it also does it over there, you know, they started this trend toward applications that don't have that prominent menu bar and have, you know, really toned down toolbars and so forth. But it's interesting in IE 7 and 8, they really didn't go to an extreme with it, but it looks like in IE 9, finally, they're going to. So I think it's a nice look. It looks good to me.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think what it speaks to is the notion of a browser not being really an application, but more... a window to applications. And so you don't want a browser menu bar cluttering what may well be a menu bar inside the window there.
What you just said is very, very wise.
I am a wise man, Paul. Someday you'll understand that.
No, you're right. And in Microsoft designed Windows Phone 7 to do the same thing. You know, the UI should get out of the way because it's the content that matters.
Right.
And that's equally true in the browser. And that is one of the points of this UI, that Microsoft knows that you're on the web for the site or the service or whatever it is you're accessing it, not for the window. You know, that thing needs to get out of the way as much as possible. So, you know, obviously the Google guys get that with Chrome as well, and I'm sure that's one of their big marketing messages for the browser. It's one of the reasons I really like it.
Yeah. That's good. And it's why, by the way, is why exactly why I use Chrome almost exclusively.
Speaking of which, I don't know what it's like on the Mac, but Chrome 6, the beta version.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I know it just came out.
It's so fantastic.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. So you would recommend it?
Yeah.
Even though it's beta?
I love it.
Okay.
And it's so much like this IE thing in that there's literally a single wrench icon for all of the, you know, what used to be the menu bar and the options and all that stuff is all hidden in place.
Yep.
I really like the extension system they have. I love the fact that you can install extensions without rebooting the thing. It's got a super clean look.
Use it a lot now is because I'm able to do a full screen. I mean, I could do this with Internet Explorer, full screen, but then I get the tabs if I scroll up to the top. Very clean, simple look, and I can zoom in on it. So it's really good for television, you know,
or if you're just reading something. They don't have that feature that Safari has, but you can download that readability.
I love that.
Awesome. It's just awesome.
Yeah, I really love that.
Yep, I do too.
Okay, moving along to our next story. Actually, before we do that, let me mention our friends at Carbonite, because they're such nice guys. Carbonite's backup done right. We use Carbonite here at the studio. We are using the business version of Carbonite, but also at home I use Carbonite, and even on my daughter's laptop. This is talk about mission critical. She's off to college. I put it on. It's on a Mac, but it works on Windows or Mac. I put it on her MacBook, and I know that someday she will either lose the MacBook, the hard drive will fail, or probably most likely she'll accidentally throw out a paper that she needs. She'll call me. She'll say, Daddy, I haven't called you in 6 months except to ask for money, and here I am begging, pleading. There must be some way to get that paper back. And I'll say, this is, by the way, my sad, sad fantasy. I'll say, honey, Daddy thought ahead and put Carbonite on that laptop. And now all you have to do is go to the library, use your iPhone. There's a free app. Your BlackBerry, there's a free app. And you can get that file, any file. Carbonite's been backing it up all along. You didn't even know it. In the background, automatic backups whenever you're online without being intrusive, without slowing you down. And yet you never lose another thing. $55 a year for all your personal files on your internal drive. Everything on that laptop. I mean, that's nice. Just very affordable. And the peace of mind is great. I want you to try it free for 15 days. You don't even need a credit card. All you need is the word Windows Weekly. One word. That's the coupon code. You could try it just to see. And I really do encourage you to see how Carbonite works, if it's working for you. I think the one thing the trial doesn't do, it backs up everything except large video files. Maybe music, too. You know, they limit the bigger files. But just so you can see how it works. And then if you decide to buy, you'll get 2 months free if you use the coupon code Windows Weekly. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Windows Weekly. It's just the way backup ought to be. Simple, effective, off-site, and automatic. Carbonite.com. Paul Thurrott is here, editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And his new... Oh, he's got his Kindle. Oh, that's pretty. It's been hard for you to actually do this show, hasn't it?
I'm okay.
Having that Kindle standing right in front of you this whole time.
It's okay.
That's all right. You were almost done. Let's just whiz through the last.
Yeah, yeah.
Small office web apps update gives hope for future. Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
Yes.
What does that even mean?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Next story. Small office web apps update. Right.
Microsoft, as you know.
Yes.
Recently released a web-based version of its Office productivity suite, Office Web Apps.
I did know that. Right? Yes.
Okay. There's also a companion product called Facebook Docs, right? Which is most of Office Web Apps on Facebook.
Okay. They announced that at F8, the Facebook conference. And I thought, wow, this is very interesting. What a play.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So my big thing about Office on the web has always been, you know, if Microsoft could do this right, they would dominate this market. It's a no-brainer. Everyone loves Office. It's so much better than the Google stuff or any of the stuff online. But, you know, Microsoft doesn't typically do stuff right. You know, they would release this thing like they did and then just let it sit there for 18 months like they've done with Windows Live. And I find that irritating, but also displaying a sort of cluelessness about the market. You know, I've always felt like they need to update. And, you know, it's been out for a couple of months, so they've released the first update. It's not so much that it's a dramatic update. It's more that, look, they updated it. You know, they've done the minimum, you know, that I think they need to do, and that's great. And I've gotten some hints that there's more updates to come in the near future, which is fantastic. So I think they actually, it's a little early to say. I don't want to say this definitively, but I think they get it. I think they understand they can't just let this thing sit there. You know, one of the beautiful things about having an online service instead of an application that you have to install on your hard drive is that they can update it once and it updates it for everybody. You know,
I really like that, frankly. That's, to me, the single biggest and most compelling argument for web-based apps. I mean, there are a lot of arguments against web-based apps, but it's one of the reasons, for instance, we use QuickBooks online, not QuickBooks on hard drive.
I mean, it's just, there's a number of like specific features they need to add, but what they need to add sort of generally is the ability for you to log on and have certain customizations that are related to you. You know, for example, one of the things that's missing from Office web apps right now is a dictionary of any kind, let alone a custom dictionary. It would be really neat if there was a dictionary. But then, you know, when I log in, I should get my dictionary that has all of the replacement words that I've added because I write about certain things and certain words come up a lot that wouldn't come up for other people. And I should be able to get the benefit of that, not have a brand new dictionary every time I log in, you know. So I think that's where it's heading. But, you know, to get there, they can't just release Office web apps, you know, 2012 in 2 years. They need to, you know, every month or every 2 months or whatever, every 3 months at the most, they need to roll out small features. So they've done the first one. And like I said, I think you're going to see some more very quickly. So,
you know, I confess, I should be using this because, I mean, in lieu even of Microsoft Office, this is probably all I need. It's free. And they, you know, I'm just looking at some of the interesting applications. This is a Facebook application that uses your Facebook data in docs.com to create a resume automatically.
Speaking of which, are you back on Facebook?
Yeah, because of stuff like this. How can I review stuff like this?
I just wanted to, well, somebody named Leo Laporte friended
me. That's me.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
It's the greatest shame of my life, frankly.
there wasn't a way to turn it down as, you know, like horrifically as I wanted to. But
Sarah did. Sarah did. She said, if you knew Leo, you would know he does not have a Facebook page. You are not Leo. So stop asking to be my friend.
I just said, screw you, Laporte.
Yeah. And I went, oh, dear. I'm so humiliated. But I realized, right, you know, back. It started when Places came out. I realized as much as I hate Facebook and wish it would go away and wish somebody would replace it with an open standard, it's there and you can't not use it.
But it is such a major platform.
You have to use it.
And yeah. And it's like Google in many ways. You may disagree with them from sort of a philosophical standpoint, but
I weren't a tech journalist, I wouldn't feel any obligation. But because I am, and I, you know, people quite reasonably want me to do things like cover docs.
Yes. But so in the case of Facebook, I would say if I wasn't doing what I'm doing for a living, I would still use Facebook, because the reason I like Facebook is it lets me keep up with people that I don't speak to or see personally a lot, like my family and friends who some of them live far away. But, you know, the truth is some of them live in this area and I just don't see them. So this is a neat way to keep in touch. But my God, you have to put up with a lot of crap.
Well,
on
that's
Facebook.
The thing I hate about Facebook. I don't want to stay in touch with these people. I'm embarrassed to ignore them, but I'm going to. Okay. And so that's the part. So what I'm saying, and you know, it's probably not sinking in, is this is a dummy account. This is so I can see how Facebook works. Don't expect me to play with you. But I did have to add people, and I'm adding people like you so that I can get some sense of like places, the places check-ins. If you don't have other friends, you can't see what check-ins look like from other people and so forth. So you just kind of have to.
This is sounding like pathetic. Who's watching the Watchmen kind of a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I got you.
I got to watch them.
That's fair.
And, you know, 500 million users, you can't, you know, I felt the same way about AOL some years ago where I didn't want an AOL account, but if people were going to ask me questions about AOL.
You had to know about
I had to use it.
Didn't just look at the box. That's what you're saying.
I didn't just look at the box. Yeah. And now look what happens. I've created a resume on Facebook, and it's now public. This is the problem. All this, and you would never know this unless you used Facebook. All this stuff shows up on Facebook just kind of automatically because I pushed a docs button that said create a resume. And that's why I'm so glad to be on
198
Facebook.
198 comments from people like, oh, Leo's making a resume.
I know. Well, exactly, yeah.
In fact, I'm going to do it right now.
It's a pretty pathetic resume, actually, because it does. I didn't put enough stuff on Facebook to make it really worthwhile. Oh, I have to do something.
I created a dummy Facebook account for the book because the people I have on Facebook, there were too many of them. It was overwhelming the phone.
Yeah. That's another thing.
I needed some way to test it. But, of course, you know, I had 100 people try to friend me.
I know. Isn't that weird that now it's announced to the world that I've made a resume? That's a big problem. If I were actually employed, that would be embarrassing.
This LA Times story is going to be updated. Apparently, you're looking for a new job.
Yeah, did you see that? So Mark Millian, who's great, he's been on Twit many times, writes an LA Times story in which he says, Leo was at the Bob Hope Airport yesterday, and then he went there, and I went, what the hell? And then I realized, oh, those are all Foursquare check-ins. And
that's great.
But I mean, talk about a privacy thing. That's now in the newspaper.
Yeah. Well, actually, which is probably the safest place of all for it to be.
I guess so. Nobody's going to read that.
Nobody reads that. They're going to be able to space.
Nobody's going to see that. All right. life is interesting. That's all I can say. And privacy is very challenging at this point. Because I pushed a button, and now my resume is on Facebook.
I mean, I'm, you know,
and my CEO just came in and said, what are you doing?
Right. I just got an update.
You just created a Facebook resume. What are you doing?
Oh, man. That's good.
Hey, are you, now that you've reached, what is it, the 10th prestige in Call of Duty, you're going to go back to Halo, right? When Reach comes out, this is going to be the big thing for you. Is that you like Halo?
Yeah, my feelings about Halo have been widely misconstrued. So allow me to set the record straight.
Oh, okay.
In the world of first person shooters, I never felt like the Halo multiplayer stuff was all that great. In fact, I still am not that impressed by it. But I recognize that there are people lots and lots of people who think it is just it. I mean, it's, in fact, Halo 3 right now even though it's years old,
it's still bigger.
Is
than,
in the top three or five games being played online right now.
Well, I remember when it came out, people were just people were in line for hours, days.
If you said to me, as actually I had a friend who did this recently, I want to get back into gaming. I'm thinking about hopping into Halo when it comes out. Mm-hmm. My advice is forget that. These people have done nothing but play this game for the past 5-6 years. You will never last a second. It will be a bad experience.
That's the problem. But I have that problem with Call of Duty, too, or anything I play.
Call of Duty, same thing. So, but that's not actually why I really like Halo. I feel like I'm in a huge minority here, but I've always loved the storyline stuff and the single-player experience, to me, of all those games. You know, Halo and Halo 2, 3, and ODST. I actually enjoy the single-player experience stuff. So I'm looking forward to it just from that perspective, but...
So Reach, Halo Reach, and it's due out soon, yeah?
Yeah, about 2.5 weeks. I think September 14th, I think.
But here's the good news. You can play it right now.
You can, but only by yourself.
because apparently, if you use it, you're in trouble.
Yeah, Microsoft made it available to reviewers through some kind of an FTP site, and somebody broke into it, downloaded it, and then seeded it out to all these file sharing sites. And you could download it and burn it, and there are instructions for making it work and all that stuff.
But
if you do, and Microsoft says they have a way to know that you do, even if you don't connect online, and you know.
Oh, that's interesting. You don't have to try to play Xbox Live,
right?
Just by putting it on your machine would be enough.
Just by installing it, they'll permaban you, is what they call it. You know, permanent ban from Xbox Live.
And so, we're not talking permaban from Halo. We're talking permaban from the whole damn thing.
Yeah, from the whole online service.
Forever. Now, I mean, for your life.
You could, I guess, sign on as a different name or something with a different credit card and all that. But
No.
But you lose all of your achievements and all. I mean, the reason you're doing this, the reason people are so fanatic about this.
I bet you'd have to buy a new Xbox. Don't you think they'd have an ID?
Well, the machine itself. I'm sorry. Yes.
That machine is banned.
That could be too. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big deal. So, the first thing I did when I read the story was I went and looked, and I found it online, sure enough. And then thinking about this, and I'm like, there's no upside to this, and there are huge downsides. You know,
you can wait 2 weeks.
I can wait.
So, how was it? Did you enjoy it?
It was great. I finished it. No, I used my son's account, so I'm also.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't you think there's a little revelation here that Microsoft has this ability to look into your Xbox and see what's going on there?
No, not really. This thing is so locked down. You know, this has been the case from day one. You know, they use it's a DVD drive, but it's especially formatted disc. They have a kind of a weird, formatting on the hard drive itself. It's not interoperable in any way with any of the PC stuff. So. No, not really. I mean, they've always... They're trying to prevent piracy. It's understandable.
And now, we take you to Halo Reach. Not available on any platform. It looked, you know, they had a giant life-size models of your team in Halo Reach at E3. That somebody, some nutball made. They wouldn't let me take a picture of it.
Interesting.
But it was pretty cool. This is the trailer, so this is a cutscene, I presume.
Yeah, this is not the game graphics.
I wish this were game graphics, though. Look how real. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yep.
But it's not a new engine. It's the same engine.
That's the thing. You know, it's part of my, I don't mean to say disdain, but, you know, part of the thing with Halo with me is I don't feel like they've done a lot to advance the graphics over the years. Not that it looks bad. But it, you know, after this many years, this many games, it's getting a little, okay, we get it. You know, it's just the same thing again.
And Microsoft owns Bungie, right? So this is a Microsoft, wholly owned Microsoft game.
Bungie used to be owned by Microsoft, but they split with Microsoft. Oh. So this game was the last game they made under their contract with Microsoft. It was made by Bungie. It was completed after they left Microsoft. Bungie has since connected with Activision, I think. And I believe that they're part of Activision now. But now Microsoft owns the Halo IP, so they're free to make.
All future Halo games will still be Microsoft titles.
Yeah, so this will be the last one from Bungie, the originators of this series.
Right. So, just for fun.
Yeah.
Will you hear this, kids? How many titles have you pre-ordered now on Xbox?
It's an embarrassing side story to this. Because... 3 of those, I ordered 2 copies.
One for you, one for your son.
Right.
Why, I just had a curiosity, is that in case one breaks?
Yeah, you want to have a backup. Because you don't want to be gaming at 3 o'clock in the morning and then have an unscheduled... No, it's because we play simultaneously on different Xboxes.
Oh, I see. One for
each. Actually, you know, some of these games have some cool cooperative possibilities. For example, you can play games together. So we'll see. I'm right now, for the summer, we put the Xbox in his room for the first time.
Oh, you're asking for trouble. You'll take it out when school begins?
When school starts, it's coming out. So the question is whether I put it back in here or in the cellar. And I'm actually thinking for some of these games, it might be neat to play this game side by side.
That's, to me, what I loved about LAN parties is you're sitting across from the person you're playing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can yell at them, which is really fun.
Right. There's a group of guys. We get together once a month and do LAN parties.
I love that.
Up the street, yeah.
We used to do that at the Screensavers. We'd have 4 or 5 Halo games going on. I mean, one game, but 4 or 5 people playing on the set. It was tough to go back from commercial. We were having so much fun. We'd play during commercials.
Yeah, no, I've been doing this dating back to...
It was great.
Must be 93, no, maybe 1994. When I used to work at a college, and we used to come in on weekends
really
and just play.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Doom.
So, tell us the list. What games, just so we know, so I can duplicate.
These are the ones that I care about, right? They're mostly shooters, and then the Kinect stuff, of course. So I've got Halo Reach next week, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, the 14th.
Medal of Honor is coming out in October.
Mm-hmm.
This is a new entry, kind of a Modern Warfare type game from an older, from the series that spawned Call of Duty. Call of Duty Black Ops, that's coming out in November.
Are you excited about that? Does that look good? Or?
Yeah, that's the big one.
It looks good at E3, but I'm not a COD fan, so I don't play it. So.
I love this stuff.
I guess like Facebook, I should probably play it.
Oh, Control Cars on Facebook, yeah. There might be a Facebook.
No, I mean just like my same position about using Facebook. Yeah. I should be playing these games so that I can talk about them.
I really like the single-player games. The same thing. The Call of Duty stuff, I think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But I have that same problem as I get on the game and I get teabagged by a 12-year-old. I can't take it.
My son has a misunderstanding about what that is, which I'm...
Just keep it going, Paul. Don't tell him.
Right. So,
Medal of Honor, Black... Oh, Assassin's Creed. There's a third title.
Third one. Now, here's the thing. I really liked the first game, but it was repetitive. The second game, because it came out right before Call of Duty, I played briefly and then never played again. So, I actually... My plan now is to catch up on Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's Italy. It's beautiful.
I can't wait. So, and there's been some really good Assassin's Creed games on the iPhone, for whatever that's worth. Those are actually decent little games.
Really? I haven't played those.
Yeah, they're good. And then, of course, the Kinect is coming out in November.
I am going to get some Kinect titles. That really looks like
Kinect.
Fun.
If you ordered I don't remember. I didn't write them down, but it's, you know, the adventure one where you go down the river and the raft. And
that's really fun. I played it. It's really, really fun.
Yeah,
Becky Worley and I played it. Yeah.
Yeah. We have to get that, so.
Yeah, it's fun for the whole family.
Yeah. Now, my wife uses, not Wii Fit, but an Activision Wii Fit type of thing to work out. And she uses it all the time.
The Kinect workout one is going to be better.
Yeah.
Because you're using your whole body. I mean, it's really neat.
Yeah. And because I know she uses it, this is something I wouldn't normally do. You know, like a trailer comes out for Call of Duty. I'm like, Stephanie, come on in here. You get to see this. You know, like she could care less. But that Kinect, whatever the Kinect title was, and I think it was a third-party game, I actually showed it to her and I said, if you want, we can grab this. I mean, I think, you know, and she thought it looked great. So, yeah, we'll give it a shot. So there's a lot of stuff. I mean, this is, it's
the end of the year. How are you going to do? Oh, I guess because your book's done.
My book's done. I got nothing to do. No,
this is the flip side of the bad news about the book. The good news is when it's done.
Yeah, I turn into
Halo Party.
Man Fort Sloth.
Fort Sloth. Is that your man cave? You call it Fort Sloth. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm in Sloth Troop.
A lot of gaming that has to occur here.
This is actually a good year for
you know my son
Xbox
to me.
You
know, by the way, my son, actually, he didn't say this to me. I heard him say this to someone else because I played video games regularly my entire life. But in the month of July, I stopped playing any games because I had to get this book done. So the entire month of July, I didn't play any games. And then, of course, August came. We went away. So obviously, I wasn't playing in August either.
Boy, man,
but I heard him say to someone, before my father got old, He used to play video games, but now he doesn't play anymore.
And like, this...
It just happened like a month ago. What's talking about?
You got old like last month.
And I'm like, if I can get over there in my walker, I'll hit you so hard.
And dance on your grave, Sonny.
My father got old.
Wow, Paul.
I know.
It's just beginning. Let me tell you, it gets worse. Oh, it gets so much worse. My son said I'm 30 years past old.
Yikes.
So now you're changing your tune, I see here on Intel and McAfee.
I wouldn't say changing my tune because that makes me look bad, but I would say this.
Hey, I change my tune every song.
Oh, no. I you know, when we talked about this last week, we hadn't written this down as a topic. You mentioned to me, hey, did you hear this thing that just happened? And I had seen the headline. I didn't really look into it. We sort of read through the press release, and it is, I mean, it's stupefying what they said. But, you know, the more I thought about this and the more I thought about what they said about it, and you think about the future of computing and the different devices and so forth, it really does line up with something I've been saying about Microsoft for a long, long time, which is that I always felt that security should have been a built-in feature of Windows, and it should just be something you get for free. That if you could make the argument, yeah, and I think you can, that Windows is responsible explicitly or implicitly for all of these security problems that
we
have.
I agree.
That how could they charge you for something that fixes that problem? How could they leave that market open for others to feed leech-like off of, you know, and charge you these yearly subscriptions, and how awful that software is, and how people don't know they're not protected when the subscription runs out and all that stuff. And I thought, you know, if you think about compute, you know, the reason I came up with Microsoft should just give this away for free is that in the context of 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever, you know, Windows was the computing platform. It was computing. But the way computing's going now is we have all these devices. You know, I just got this Kindle or smartphones or iPads or whatever it is. You know, PCs will be part of it, but PCs are only part of it. And maybe you think of security a little more holistically and think, it's the platform isn't necessarily the software that runs on top of it. Maybe we take a step back and it's the underlying hardware platform. Maybe this is something that should be in the hardware, and it's something that the software that runs on top of it should take advantage of. You know, Microsoft and Intel, no coincidence there, actually tried to push a system called Palladium back in the Longhorn time frame that was going to do just this, but for PCs, only for Windows-based PCs. And there were a lot of misconceptions around it, but I remember thinking at the time that this thing, it became next generation secure computing base, and it kind of got filtered down so that by the time Windows Vista shipped, all we had left was BitLocker and a couple of other low-level security technologies. It's still a good idea today, right? And things are only going to get more connected. It's not like we're going to devolve from a connectivity standpoint. So maybe it does make sense. You know, I still wish they would put a bullet in the in the security suite thing. But, you know, maybe integrating security into the basic part of the platform, i.e. the...
I think it's too low level. I don't see how you can really do it at that level.
Well, it can't be just that. But see, when you think about security controls in Windows, like really low level security controls, they're always better when there's a hardware tie-in, right? That some tie-in with the hardware chipset gives you that kind of checksum capability where you can, you know, that it's the same machine and that it hasn't been compromised and that you didn't put the hard drive in a different machine or whatever it might be, that there's an integration that can occur between the low-level firmware, whatever you want to call it, the chipset, you know, software, and the software running on top of it. It can't be just the Intel stuff. But, you know, in the future, if Intel integrates this stuff into their microprocessors or increasingly into their, you know, system on a chip type chips, that, you know, Windows and Mac OS X on the PC will need to understand that and work with it and thus be more secure as a result. And I think that's where it goes. And then you can extrapolate that out to all the, you know, the other devices that Intel would support as well.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not saying.
I'm going to take a wait and see.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd like to see what they've got.
There's a million ways this could go wrong. I mean, right. I mean, they're going to keep selling McAfee stuff. Great. that doesn't make any sense to me at all. But
right.
I mean, obviously, they have a business.
Well, maybe it's a recognition that McAfee and all the antivirus vendors are kind of moving into a new world because of Microsoft Security Essentials. There's no, I mean, there really can't be much of a future for a boxed disk of antivirus software.
Any of those companies, Symantec, McAfee, et cetera, are going to have IP that's important,
right?
Patents and so forth. They're going to have key personnel that understand this stuff. They probably already have people that have been working on this integration of hardware and software.
Oh, sure.
So this it's not, they didn't buy it for the security suite, right? I mean, that's kind of a short-term play. I think they bought it for this other stuff.
Although, I was stunned to see that the security suite earns $2 billion a year in revenue. So it's not, I mean, it's not such a bad play.
I guess.
If you thought they were going to continue to make $2 billion a year for the next few years anyway. So HP made or at least the rumors are HP is going to be doing a Microsoft tablet and a WebOS tablet.
Yeah. Well, they've said it.
Yeah.
That's right.
In an analyst call, they admitted it. Right.
Yep. We're doing this in 2011.
Google apparently, and I think this is still a rumor, although Eric Schmidt said something at a party once, going to make an Android tablet.
Neat. And of course, there are a lot of third parties who are taking the existing Android system and just putting it on a tablet, right? Even though it's not really designed for that. But the central question I have here is, so these guys, who are the only other viable competitors out there for the iPad, I guess, how come no one is complaining how late they are to the party, right? Microsoft is seen as a dinosaur. They're slow.
Right.
They can't get out of their own way.
Oh, I think there's a lot of press about why... we saw all these announcements in January at CES and still nothing. I don't think it's just Microsoft that's getting heat.
I think if you look at the blogosphere especially, there's been this, Microsoft's market or Microsoft's business is going to collapse in the next few years. And, this is one of those little cracks at the seams that proves that they have no idea what they're doing. I think actually, I think you would be crazy to buy a Windows-based tablet this year. I'll just say that. But I don't think they're being any slower than any of these other guys. So if you look at something like a WebOS-based tablet or a tablet based on Android, like a real tablet. When I say a tablet, I mean a kind of a mainstream computery kind of like an iPad. Not just a big version of Android with a touch screen and you can play movies on it. I mean like an actual tablet computing device. They're no quicker coming to market than Microsoft is. I'm just sort of highlighting that fact, that it's, and I fall into this trap too. It's very easy to criticize Microsoft. But where are the other where are the other competitors? I mean, it's not like anyone else is racing to market with a tablet, a true tablet, like a an iPad type of tablet. So,
why is that? Do you think? I mean, just a speculation.
Well, why would they? So when
because there's no market.
No. I mean, in other words, how could they? 6 months ago, 9 months ago, when there were just rumors about the iPad. What's the big deal? This could be like the SUV thing too. I mean, because I'm going to be beating the car thing to death for the next 6 months.
you read one book,
I actually have many more queued up.
We'll get to that in a second.
It may be a temporary thing too. I mean, there are signs, and again, it's early. The iPad stuff is, we haven't heard any more numbers out of Apple. I mean, they were pretty aggressive about that. I would imagine
it's slowing down.
That's what I've read. I mean, so we'll see. Apple will announce something in about in about a week, right? At September 1st. No doubt they will release a revised iPad sales figure, and at that time we can look and see. We'll see what happened. But I still, for all of the excitement as it is over the iPad, I mean, we're still talking about something that. It's phenomenal for them to have come out of the gate. It's certainly done better than people thought. But, again, this comes back to that central discussion we had about the iPad a long time ago, which is just, we're still talking about something that is a minority compared to anything else out there. I almost think it's like a perception thing. Like, we kind of have to do this, right? So there's this perception that Apple has made a big push here. So we have to do this now too, right? Without understanding that it's not the tablet form factor that makes the iPad interesting. It's the whole package. There's an app store specifically for that device now, that has interesting apps. Coming out with a Windows 7 tablet's not going to solve any problem. It's just going to be another Windows 7 PC that doesn't have a keyboard, I'm just curious how this is all going to play out. I mean, I think they all feel like they have to do it. I just don't think there's any huge point to it.
Yeah. That's because you've never done GoToMeeting on an iPad. out in your backyard.
No. I didn't say there was no point to the iPad. I mean, there's no point to copying the iPad.
Right. It's done, in other words.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, because I think most computer companies say take it as a challenge. They don't say, oh, they got it. They did it. We can't do anything better. I mean, they didn't that with the iPhone. It just took them a long time.
No. I mean, in other words, let's say that there is a $10 million unit, a 10 million unit per year sales run you can do with the iPad. Like, let's say that's what it is. So you want to do better than that. So you're going to say that Microsoft and its partners are going to get together and they're going to put Windows 7 on a tablet, and that those tablets are going to sell 12 or 15 million. Look, we won, but what did you do?
Right, what have you accomplished?
You sold 10 or 15 million
units
out of 400 million.
Got it. You're saying it's a niche product. It's not a big money maker.
I'm saying in the PC world, it doesn't make sense. For Apple, it's additive. For a PC maker that already sells PCs, what are you doing? You're taking it away from something. I mean, you're going to sell 400 million next year anyway. Why the R&D? Why would you do that? I mean, I don't know. It seems pointless to me.
You've made an interesting case. I hadn't really even thought about that. Sometimes we get so caught up with the glory and all the attention that Apple gets that we forget that this is a business. And there's no business case for it. You don't have to rush and do it. Now, the iPhone, maybe there was a business case to create an iPhone competitor. I mean, that's
absolutely
a big market.
Of course. No, the iPad makes sense for Apple on a number of levels. Apple saw that the iOS ecosystem was selling very well, and this is a chance to really kind of milk that in a way that makes a lot of sense. I think there's a huge opportunity for them. Imagine if they sold as many iPads as they sell Macs. Imagine if they sold more iPads than sell Macs. For a company like Apple, that's all additive. They're not really taking away from anything they already do. Even if they do sell a few less Macs next year, it will be because they sold a lot more iPads. It's not like a one-to-one thing. I mean, I think that for Apple, because they're in a weird hybrid position between consumer electronics and computing. The companies that should be going after the iPad are Sony and Nintendo. You know, companies like that. I mean, there's no general business computing case to be made for the iPad. That's crazy. That's not what it is. Listen, the iPad exists for one reason and one reason only. And I discovered this in Germany, and that is Angry Birds HD. And
you might have some takers on that one, actually.
Everything else is just icing on the cake.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, you might be right.
It's not for Lotus 1-2-3. It's not for, you know, PowerPoint. It's for Angry Birds.
I think that, truthfully, the big advantage that the iPhone has is gaming. Way over everybody else, because so many games have been written for it, not because it's the only one that can do it. I'm sure the Windows mobile phone will be just as capable. In fact, it looks like it'll be more capable.
Windows phone's going to give it a nice little run. I'm curious that the gaming market on Android never took off in any real way, but I think that it exposes an inherent weakness in Android, which is that it feels a little too slapped together to me.
Yeah.
That there's still, you know, they still haven't, there still isn't an Android solution that runs across everything for just doing basic things around media, you know,
I would hold off a little bit, because I think Android is coming into its own. And now that they're installing 200,000 Android phones a day and so forth, you know, there is, my Droid X comes with the Need for Speed Shift demo that is every bit as capable as anything I've seen on the iPad. It's doable. It's not that it's not doable. I've heard some developers complain that OpenGL is buggy.
But Apple, you mentioned games is one of the big advantages.
It is their big advantage, yeah.
I would say at a lower level, the big advantage that Apple has is an incredible
ecosystem.
Well, I was going to say, from a programming standpoint, they have a well-documented, well-made, and logical, object-oriented, foundation for their stuff. There's a lot of stuff out there. Microsoft has done a tremendous job in a very short period of time doing the development stuff for Windows Phone. If you go and look at that, the amount of videos they have available already, the developer tutorials and all the stuff, it's fantastic. On the Android side,
it's very open source.
Like I said,
it's Eclipse.
It's slapped together.
Yeah, it's open sourcey. If you're an open source developer, you'll feel right at home because you've already been using Eclipse and Java and so forth.
I don't think people want to roll their own anymore. I think they want assistant UIs. I think they want...
There is this new Android, this Android innovation. I can't remember what they call it. In fact, I just got an invite to it. that makes it supposedly very easy to develop for Android, but not, it won't be games. It won't be high-end stuff. It'll be...
I mean, it will come. I'm just saying, you know...
No, you're right. I think that's legit.
It's, you know, yeah, it's just the function of the type of product it is. I have no idea.
No, you're legit. Let's get to our Windows features of the week. Then we're going to get our Android pick and software pick of the week.
Our Android pick? Is that what you said?
I mean, did I say that? I snuck that in. Our Audible.
I don't actually have an Android.
No, an Audible actually. Audible pick. Oh, of the week. Yeah, sorry. That was a Freudian slip. Actually, it was intentional. I'm going to start saying Android whenever I can. Android.
Just to see if you can get under my skin.
Yeah.
Every time I say Windows Phone, you're going to say Android.
Android.
Windows Phone is interesting, but what do you think about that Android?
The joys of being a Google fanboy. I'm actually not as much of a fanboy as I was after the Verizon thing, but that's another story for another day. What is your Windows 7? Do you still want to keep doing these features of the week?
Yeah, I have more features. So actually, I should say, you know, last week, because I was flying home over the weekend, I did...
kind of a lame one. Sticky notes.
Purposefully.
Yeah.
But I have to ask you, if you haven't done it, I'm guessing you haven't, you got to go to my website and you got to read the article I wrote about sticky notes.
Did you find new uses?
No, no. You just got to go look at it. It's beautiful.
All right. Where would I find that?
Well, if you go to, you know, winsupersite.com.
Yeah.
There should be a sticky notes graphic on the left.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Windows, feature focus, sticky notes. Let's just see what Paul did with the topic. He wrote it all in sticky notes.
Isn't that great?
That's good. That's a lot of work Paul went to just to do that. That's awesome, Paul. And you know what? It covered the fact that there's only 120 words in this article.
Yeah.
Very nicely. Yeah. Nicely done.
Yep. This wasn't a lot to say.
No, but you said it elegantly, and that's really what blogging's all about these days.
Yes, it is.
Conciseness. And you even got, you know, the ad is actually bigger.
I know. And the notes. I know.
It would have been cool if you could have done the VMworld ad in a sticky note.
I don't have a control over the ads.
Are you coming out for VMworld?
No.
A lot of our listeners are. I'm getting a lot of people want to come by the studio.
I have to go to Colorado right around that time or right after that time, so it didn't make sense to do both.
That's cool. So, this week's feature
is parental controls. And again, you know, like a lot of the tips we've, not tips, features that we've covered here, I'll just give a brief overview and then over the weekend I'll post a longer story. But parental control functionality debuted in Windows Vista. And then it was actually slightly detuned in Windows 7, but on purpose, because what they did was they rolled part of it out into family safety, so that it could be updated more frequently. So a lot of the website monitoring stuff and all that is now part of Windows Live Essentials. So if you have Windows Live Essentials 2011, one of the things you will have noticed is that that stuff actually just got dramatically better. One of the limitations to the parental control stuff in the previous version was that to do it properly, you had to have your own Windows Live ID as a parent, and then you had to create these sub-accounts for each of your kids, each with their own login name and password. You had associated with your account. You had to configure them as child accounts. It was this awful disaster. And now it just works like it should. It just works with the user accounts on the Windows PC. So it's a much, much, much nicer system than it used to be. But it has all the stuff you'd want. You know, the whitelist and blacklist stuff for installing and using certain applications or games. You can configure the computer so that your child cannot log in during a certain time period. So if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and they try to log on and use the computer, they can't.
Damn you, kids.
Yeah, no, it works. It's good stuff. So I'll write up some stuff about that over the weekend.
I actually have been very impressed by the parental controls in Windows. Windows 7, they just really upped it. It's great. I mean, it's been good, but it's really, really good.
I know they're good because, you know, I've got a friend who travels with us a lot, and he came out with his daughter and with his own laptop, and she wanted to get on online, but they had actually kicked her off of Facebook for whatever, you know, someone posted pictures with alcohol or something, you know, so they didn't want her on Facebook. And he said, there must be a way I can prevent her from using Facebook. I said, yeah, just use the, you know, the family safety stuff in Windows Live. And it's, you know, he's not particularly technical when it comes to this kind of stuff. And he sat over there at the table and he did it and he's like, all right, it works. And he just did it by himself. So I thought, well, this has to work well because he's, you know, kind of Joe Everyman when it comes to this stuff. So he figured it out. So,
yeah, I do every year now. I'm going to do a workshop for parents in this area on protecting their kids.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And because parents, most parents aren't as technical as their kids are. So the fact that Windows has built this in, Microsoft's really done a good job.
Kids are insidious. Insidious.
It has to be in the OS. You can't add a third party into
this. His daughter had actually created a secret Facebook account.
Wow.
Which, you know, because my friend's wife monitors online. Yeah. She monitors her friends. So she saw a picture of her daughter that was linked to someone else, and it was this, you know, other account. It's unbelievable. I mean, the lengths they go to.
Well, and one of the things I talk about in this is, you know, you, of course, have the right to ask for your kids' passwords to their social sites, and you probably should, but you should know that they're going to outsmart you at every step if you really want to clamp down. So really, the solution is not to get this adversarial situation going, but to really, as kids are growing up, kind of, you know, get it together with them, that they understand why it's important, that you got to enlist them. Because if they're...
I've had this conversation with my son, and it always goes the same way. Like, this is about trust.
Right.
If I can trust you, then everything will be fine.
Exactly.
But when you betray the trust, you know, it becomes a different situation.
And kids,
you know,
as they get older, deserve privacy. I don't want to spy on my kids unless I have to.
Oh, yeah. No. I want to be able to trust the kid, but... but you have to also recognize it's not just him, it's other people, and stupidity happens and all that stuff. So
That's something you can never, adults or kids, you can never,
imagine. I mean, you appreciate this. I mean, when we were growing up, there weren't even computers.
Yeah,
I mean,
we were equally stupid. We just didn't have as much scope for our stupidity.
You can broadcast your stupidity for everyone to see in high definition video, and it will never be erased. Well, and
I'm
do it as a
poster
career.
Boy for that.
No, but I mean, as a kid, in other words, people are looking at things like Facebook and YouTube when people apply for jobs. I mean, people used to tell me when I was a kid, you'd be in school and they would say, you know, if you screw this up, this is going to hound you for the rest of your life. Yeah. As if anything I did at Oakdale Elementary School was ever going to follow me around. But, you know, you do something today and it is going to follow
you. It is. It's really crazy. Is. Yeah.
Crazy.
And our Windows 7 tip of the week.
Yeah, this is kind of a neat one. We have recommended a utility called Connectify, which is a way to share a wireless, or actually a wired connection. Mm-hmm. The technology that uses, the reason Connectify exists is because Microsoft intended to release a feature in Windows 7, which is called Wireless Hosted Network, which provides this functionality. And the reason that the GUI for that is not in Windows 7 is that what they discovered was, for whatever reason, this doesn't actually work with every single wireless chipset. So it would be kind of a bad experience. You know, you don't want to have something in Windows where it says, click here to see if it works. You know, it's either going to work or it's not. So because it couldn't work, they actually took the feature out of Windows. But the underlying technology that makes it happen is still available in Windows. So you can share these networks. So there are different reasons why you might want to do this. If you were to go to if you want to play Farmville, for example, what are you doing?
Nothing.
Okay. So if you wanted to share an internet connection of any kind, you could do it with this. And I think one of the things that's neat about it is just that it actually works for sharing a wireless connection wirelessly with the same adapter, which is really interesting when you think about it. You know, a lot of people travel with travel routers and little portable routers like that airport, Airport Express, you know, the little one that you plug into the wall, because they want to be able to maybe access a wired connection in the room that they're staying in, but be on the other side of the room with their laptop, you know, and that's one way to make that happen. So anyway, this technology is available in Windows 7. And if you know what you're doing, you can actually... you can enable it. You can use Connectify, and we've talked about that. And I'll mention that as well, but I'll explain to you in the article how you can enable this functionality just using the built-in features in Windows.
So this is the ad hoc network that you're talking about. Yeah.
Well,
would it be called an ad hoc network?
No, because it actually does share the internet connection. So it is it's really just a shared internet connection in many ways. But, you know,
but wireless.
Well, yes, and traditionally in Windows, you could, you would have a network connection on one adapter.
Right, you'd need two adapters
share
to make
it over
that
the
work.
Other. Right. But in this way, you can actually do it over a single adapter, and that's what's cool about it.
Now, let's take a break for our Audible pick of the week, and then we will get your software of the week, and we'll get out of Dodge. Audible, of course, is our great sponsor. We love them. They do audio books of all kinds. 75,000 titles a month or two ago. I think it's got to be 80 or 85 or maybe even 90. I should do another count. Audible is such a great place.
Yep.
Both Paul and I are major Audible fans. In fact, we'd probably be talking about Audible even if they weren't an advertiser. We're really, really grateful to them that they are, though. It's one of the things that makes this show possible. Go to A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audible.com/windows. Now, what you can do is sign up for the gold account there. That'll give you a book a month, every month. It's the most affordable way to subscribe to Audible. And what we're going to do is make that first month free. So you're going to get your first book free, and that means it's yours for life because you can cancel at any time, and you always have that book. So this is a very good way.
Oh, goodness.
What's the matter?
Scrolled by something that I have to look up.
Oh, you see, this is the fun thing about Audible. It's like browsing in a great bookstore, and you go, oh, wait a minute, I got to have that?
If this is in here, this is next week's.
Really? Yeah. Oh, don't tell us. Save it. Something in the front page.
Oh, yeah, it's
getting Paul damned excited. I drink for a reason.
No.
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 Okay. Although, that would be a good one, too.
It's still, by the way, one of my all-time favorites. That's a great.
I know you like that book.
Yeah, it's really
so
good.
I'm going to do an Audible search on a blank. Let's see. There's a way to do a search to see how many books there are. If you just search the entire library, how would I do this? Let's say all categories, all program types. Let's try that.
Display on one page.
And I'm getting 79,079 results. So that's how many books now are in the Audible. 79,000. We should have a party when they get to 80.
Right.
But that's one of the challenges with Audible, and that's one of the reasons we love doing this Audible pick of the week. Paul's got a book right now that he's going to recommend.
You might have actually mentioned this last week. I was holding this one.
I know. I snuck it in, and I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just, because we've talked a bit about how in different time periods, there'll be a lot of great business books related to the technology industry. And mm-hmm. then it seems like there are these dead times, you know. And I guess all of a sudden we're back, you know. So we had the Facebook book that we recommended recently.
Yep. Two good Facebook books on there.
Yeah. And this one is about Hewlett Packard, not the recent Mark Hurd stuff, but the pretexting scandal they had before. So it's called The Big Lie, Spying Scandal, and Ethical Collapse at Hewlett Packard. And we talked during the Mark Hurd stuff about HP's history and the type of company they are. And when this was going on, when they hired Carly Fiorina and so forth, HP at the time was trying to kind of reinvent themselves, and I guess they did, but not necessarily in the way they were looking for. So it's a kind of a behind-the-scenes look at the craziness that happened at HP when they were spying on people.
Yeah, this is on my list. I can't wait to read this.
Yeah.
Just came out, actually, a few months ago. It's one of the one of Audible's published books. See, Audible realized that publishers themselves weren't putting out Audible audiobooks fast enough. A lot of them were abridged, and Audible knows we like unabridged titles. So they have 9 studios now in their facility in New York. Right. Actually, it's Newark. And they record books all the time in there. They just invited me to do a book, and I don't know if I'm going to have time. I would love to do this, but it's a 13-hour book. And I just don't know. Boy, I'd really like to. I don't know if it's
what's the book?
I don't know if I can say because I don't know if
what kind of book is it?
It's exactly what you're talking about. It's a technology book.
Is it called Windows Phone Secrets?
Yes, it is, Paul. It's a surprise. No, it's by the guy who coined the term net neutrality. It's about information networks.
Okay.
And it really sounds like a dynamite book, and I'd love to read it, but it's 13 hours of finished audio. I can't even imagine how much time it would take. So I'm going to send him a note back saying, I'd love to do this, but I don't know, you know.
By the way, the book I'm going to recommend next week is 26 hours long.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
And you can get it for free.
Audible.com/windows. Enjoy. We know you will. And now it's time for Paul's software pick of the week.
This one comes from Andrew Simek, who recommended this. It's called Similarity. And it's a, you know, there are a lot of utilities like this, but this one has a big advantage. And that is It's a music file comparison utility. You know, you have a music collection of a certain size on your PC. Probably have a lot of duplicates. I certainly do. And there are different software utilities you can download that will compare the, you know, the different songs in your library and then try to find the duplicates. But usually those things use file names and metadata, and you know, they're okay. But this one actually compares the contents of the files. And I just tried it against my instrumental music because I wanted to see how it would do. And actually, it's fantastic. And you can sort it by the similarity. So it's like 100% down to 0%. And the ones that are 100% similar are always exactly the same song. They're just, you know, one song that was on a regular album, the same song on a greatest hit album or whatever. And it's a great way to, you know, remove duplicate songs from your library. So this is a neat little application, but it's at music-similarity.com.
We all need this desperately.
This is a cool one.
Yeah,
really, we talked, really, you know, good idea. I'm going to rejuvenate my digital media core series, and one of the pieces of that, of course, is around the management of your of a music library, and you know, what are some of the utilities you can use to, you know, do things like this, or you know, rating songs and so forth. So this is a great this will be a nice little part of that. The other one I found, I got via email, this one from David Sherman at the last minute. This is actually kind of awesome, is a tool called Scrim. And what it is it creates a URL for you. So when you want to put your email address on a website, especially, but if you want to send it via, well, I guess email or whatever, it gives you an HTTP address. So when people want to get your address, they have to go to the site and prove that they're people. It's essentially, you know, it's a spam protection type of thing, and according to the site, at least, it's not possible for machines to break through it and get your address.
This is great. This is a great idea.
Yeah.
And you know what like about it? They are using a CAPTCHA, but they give you it's multiple choice CAPTCHA. So the thing I hate about CAPTCHA is now I got to go to the keyboard and figure this out, and it makes it much easier.
Yeah, this one looks really neat. So it kind of came in at the last second, and I was playing with it. I thought, you know, this is really kind of decent. And, you know, they have some different ways you can share it, you know, Twitter, Facebook, HTML, and so forth. So
scr.im, Scrim. Yeah. It's free. And as far as I can tell, it doesn't seem to.
Yeah.
I mean,
my address is Scrim, you know, scr.im/Therat, you know, for example.
And you can also pick a memorable one. Yeah, so you can
you can pick your own if you want. Yep.
So maybe you can try, I can get Leo. Let's see if I can get Leo. So let me pick a URL. Protect my email. Oh, not available. Some moron has it.
Probably someone named Leo.
Yeah. Well, no. Now, Twit's not available either. Oh, well. Damn.
Sorry.
I'll find something. 64394A. How about that?
That one's taken too.
Oh, yeah, damn it. Paul Therat is the editor-in-chief of the WIN Supersite, Supersite for Windows, and we just love it. You must read it. If you like what you hear on this show, it's all there in great detail and a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. WinSupersite.com, also news editor, Windows IT Pro, and soon, he's got the Windows 7 Secrets. That's out in bookstores now. Soon, Windows Phone Secrets, any day now.
My next book will be Halo Reach Secrets.
Yeah, because that's where he's headed right now. What's your gamer tag?
Two weeks to write it. Paul Therat is my gamer tag.
That's all you need to know. From now on, we'll know exactly what Paul's up to.
Oh, and if you ever see me online in Halo, it's going to be a free-for-all. I am absolutely worthless in that game. So
you got to find a double nuke strategy for Halo.
I don't know.
He's the creator. By the way, you're talking to him. The creator of the now world-famous double nuke strategy in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Because you can never be dead enough.
Paul, we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.